Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project KCBX and its host. Today on CCV, join host Mario Espinoza-Kulik and guest from Preserve Cayucas LLC discussing housing, development, tourism, and the future of our coastal communities. You are invited to listen, learn, and participate in the conversation today, Thursday, between 1 and 2 p.m. Join the conversation and call in to 805-781-3875, or you can email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. Now let's join Mario and his guests. Over to you, Mario.
Thank you. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Central Coast Voices. My name is Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Today, we're talking about Cayucos, a small coastal community facing big questions about housing, development, vacation rentals, local governments, and quality of life. Cayucos has a population of about 2,400 people and a median age near 59. Like many of the beach towns on the Central Coast, the town offers a charming collection of homes, beachfront activities, and restaurants for locals and tourists to enjoy. We'll also have the opportunity today to talk about how community members are working to shape the future of Cayucos and set a positive example for communities throughout the region. I'm so excited to introduce you to the wonderful folks here in studio with me today. We have John Carcel, advisor to Preserve Cayucos LLC, Sharon Borarori, officer of Preserve Cayucos LLC, and Harley K. Dubois, officer of Preserve Cayucos LLC, and Vicky Tamush, officer with Preserve Cayucos LLC. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. For our guests that are listening, please do call us at 805-781-3875 with any questions you have for our guests. We'd love to hear from you. The lines are hot. Thanks for joining us, everyone. I want to ask my first question to John, and that is, how long have you lived in Cayucos, and what made you choose Cayucos as your home?
I've lived there since 1992, I guess 34 years, and it's an interesting story. I'll try to make it short. Essentially, I met my wife, Wendy Deaton, and I was living in San Luis Obispo. She had a house in Cayucos, which was, to me, some faraway place that had fireworks occasionally, and that was about all. We were living in San Luis. She had her adult children living in Cayucos, and she said to me, why don't we try living in Cayucos? And I said, no, God, it's much too far from the office. I can't be that far away. And she said, give it a try. Just give it a try. And in the spirit of matrimonial compromise, I said, okay. 3 weeks later, as she reminds me on a somewhat regular basis, I said, the only way I'm leaving Cayucos is in a pine box. I fell in love with the community then and there.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing that story with us, John. Sharon, can you please share a bit about your relationship to the town as well?
Yes, I can. My husband is the one with the long history in Cayucos. His family has been there since 1875. One of his great-grandfathers, both of them actually, great-grandfather and grandfather on the other side, immigrated from Switzerland, and they ran dairies. Dan's father and his brothers grew up on a family ranch in Cayucos that runs all the way, it used to run all the way from the ocean to east of Highway 1. Our family has been has had the property next to the Bella Vista Mobile Home Park and the Borarori Garage property since 1995, and we had inherited it from the uncles, and we have been there ever since. We do not live there permanently. We live in the valley, but we are there and feel we are there all the time, and we really feel part of the community.
Wonderful. Harley, what about you? Can you tell us about your connection to Cayucos?
Yeah, I'd love to. Over 25 years ago, my then-boyfriend, now husband, introduced me to it, and we've been vacationing there ever since for the past 25 years of marriage. 15 years ago, we bought a piece of property there, and we became landlords for three small cottages that were housing people teachers and construction workers, so affordable housing for in three cottages for many years. And then I finally had my dream come true, and I've retired here 3 years ago. So now I'm a happy resident.
Wonderful. That's amazing. And hi, Vicky. Welcome back to the Central Coast Voices.
Thank you, Marie.
Can you please share about your role and just, like, what's your connection to Cayucos?
Our family started to come to Cayucos quite by accident when I was maybe, I'm thinking, 10 or 9 or in that area. I have two younger sisters, and we were on a car vacation in the station wagon, headed someplace up north. And my youngest sister broke out in red spots, and so we pulled off and found a sweet little town and got a motel room and got a doctor to come to the motel. He came walking over to the motel room, treated my sister, and she had roseola. So at that time, they believed you shouldn't really move kids when they were sick. And so we wound up staying 2 weeks in this beautiful little beach town, and it seemed so cut off from time. Our family really fell in love with the town, and after that, we just kept coming back intentionally and spending all our vacations there, and then finally bought a little cabin that was all run down. Grass had grown into the house, and we just fixed it all up, and our family still has that vacation home, and I happen to live now directly across the street from it.
That's so beautiful. I love all of your stories about Cayucos. It makes me want to go to Cayucos.
Too.
Yeah. Right. And then what about Preserve Cayucos? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
This started because all of us and so many people in the town feel nervous about some of the directions the development is taking and the possibility that we could, in fact, lose that very unique character in the town. It has a small town feel. It is a very small town. And people, neighbors really truly are friends. And Harley lives across the street from me. And we're at each other's houses all the time. And I know if anything happened, I could call her. And she would genuinely want to help me. And I know that about all of my neighbors. And I think they know that about one another as well. It's not dependent on your personality. And either people get it or they don't. And people who don't get it are constantly coming into town thinking, this is so much like Avila Beach, but it needs to be developed more. And that concerns us.
Right. Thank you for sharing. Harley, what about your role with Preserve Cayucos? What do you do?
Well, I think we're all at the inception phase. So we're all figuring out exactly what we're doing. In fact, what's happening on May 16th is our very first time we've done anything publicly, and I know we'll talk about that later. I found myself my very first week of living full-time in Cayucos talking to my neighbors and realizing that there was a development issue very close to me that didn't seem to be going the way the neighborhood wanted it to go. And before I knew it, I found myself in supervisor meetings. And I quickly felt like, I don't know, the cards were stacked against us or me. I didn't understand the politics, but things didn't seem to be going. I didn't feel like I was being heard or we were being heard. So before I knew it, I found myself in the thick of it with these guys. And we had some success with that development. It wasn't what I had hoped for, but I started to understand the way the wheels are working here. We had some success. But out of that, we decided we would start an entity that would give us a little more power or a little more teeth to ourselves so that if we wanted to hire outside counsel or we wanted to hire experts to help us, we would have an LLC and be able to do that. And so that's the inception. Mm-hmm. But we haven't gone any further than that, really, other than this first opportunity we have on this two Saturdays from now on the 16th.
And Sharon, you want to tell us a little bit about how you got involved with Preserve Cayucos?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think my issue. I was visiting Vicky. That's what happened. Very similar to Harley's. You know, when we started coming to Cayucos on a regular basis way back in 1995, we purposely wanted to get more involved in the community. I started making rounds to all the businesses, getting to know the owners, meeting people, trying to become more aware of what's going on there and become more involved. And over this time, we did notice that some of the attitude of Cayucas that we love so much, that Vicki talked about before, the quaintness, the quietness, the fact that everybody knows everybody, that was starting to change a little bit. You know, we don't have any name brand places, no fast foods, no department stores in Cayucas. And it's what most people enjoy about Cayucas, why they tell us they come there in the first place. But we started noticing different possibilities for growth that people were suggesting or talking about, especially people not from that area. And it was concerning. And when I learned that this group was going to form this LLC, I thought maybe, like Carly said, that this is the way that we can actually get started and maybe make a difference and keep Cayucas the wonderful place it is now, that and the reason that everybody wants to be there.
That's excellent. What about you, John, as advisor, or how, like, what is your role, and what attracted you to Preserve Cayucas?
As an advisor, I advise. I don't know what that really means anymore. You know, back in, I guess, about 1995, a development was proposed for South Cayucas, a large development for Cayucas. And I worked with a bunch of neighbors because we felt there were some real problems with it. And later on over the years, as that project was developing, we started to feel, are we being NIMBYs? You know, not in my backyard. Mm-hmm. You know, they have as much right to build here as we did. Why do we think this is not good? And so we hired a firm. We went out and took up collection, and people threw money in the pot, and we hired a firm with a geologist and hydrologist and some person who understood the laws. And they came up and said, you've got a real problem here. This is a real problem. And because of the geology report, that development has not gone forward. And we have seen over the years with the Cayucas Advisory Council that if you do not have an expert, you cannot prevail over someone who does have an expert witness. So if there's a geologist who says everything about this hillside is safe, that's what the decision makers have to go with. They have no choice. And yet the advisory council just advises. They had no means to raise money to hire an expert to independently tell us what's going on. Not the expert hired by the developer, but somebody truly independent. What's really going on here? You know, tell me what the whole hillside looks like, not just this lot. And so we started talking about, we did this once. Why don't we do this all the time? Why don't we have a vehicle for doing this so that we can get really, truly objective answers to some of these questions? You know, on the south end of Cayucas, I live on a lot that is patently unsafe. It's the toe of a landslide. Okay. Now, when it was built, I'm sure the geologist said that lot is fine. But if he had looked up the hill, he would have seen that it wasn't fine. So all I can do is pray that we live in geological times and nothing will happen for another 1,000 years. But if it starts to rain real heavy, we take off.
And I had heard 1995 was when that was happening. Is there any more recent iterations, or when did you begin to notice that development was going to affect Cayucas?
Well, that started in 95. You know, they were sent out for an EIR. They still haven't done that, but an environmental impact report that has not yet been done. And periodically it comes up again. I think the last time in 2013 and 2014. And my understanding is they have still not been able to find a geologist who's going to put his license on the line for it. I could be wrong. I'm guessing at that.
No.
But it's a major problem that needs massive slope study analysis of the entire hillside that are extremely expensive, that needs to be done to see exactly how safe this is. It became to a level that I eventually filed the geologist's report with the county board of supervisors and instructed my children how to sue the board if we're covered in a mudslide.
Yeah.
Okay. The planning department response to it was this would all be covered in the environmental impact report, and that hasn't even started yet.
Gotcha. Very important. And for people who are just tuning in, I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. As we continue Central Coast Voices, our guests today are John Carcel, advisor to Preserve Cayucos LLC, Sharon Boradori, officer of Preserve Cayucos LLC, and Harley K. Dubois, officer of Preserve Cayucos LLC, and Vicky Tamush, officer with Preserve Cayucos LLC. We've been getting to know everyone here at the table and what their connection is to Cayucos, but for the next section, I want to focus on what the core issues that Preserve Cayucos is organizing around, including what we've just recently talked about, development, and also vacation rentals, affordability, and what the community's makeup is going to look like if it keeps changing. Cayucos isn't an incorporated city, which means many major land use, housing, and development decisions are shaped through San Luis Obispo County processes, meaning that the Board of Supervisors are in the jurisdiction for the decisions that are made for development. The county partners with local leaders when possible and balances the local needs with those of the region. In this context, community members play a key role, so your voice matters, especially as a resident of Cayucos. You can learn more and get into contact with Preserve Cayucos at preservecayucosllc@gmail.com. If you'd like to ask a question of our guests or anything about Cayucos, call 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. So we've talked about a little of what your motivations were to connect with Preserve Cayucos and establish it and have a voice and really a way to bring expert voices into the discussion when it was regarding development there. Why would it be necessary to continue and sustain the identity of Preserve Cayucos over time? Harley, do you want to start us off?
Sure, I'd love to. from my perspective, in my short term here, and in this role, like deeply involved in the politics, I've seen that a lot of people don't seem to understand what the real issues of Cayucos are, and don't respond to them in a way that hears us. It's almost tone deaf. I don't feel like we're being heard, and I'm talking about the residents, the families, the people in the middle of their careers and the people at the end of their careers, all of them. I don't feel like our voice has really been heard in a way that makes me understand it's being heard, and that's from the governmental oversight in SLO County. And so that's my biggest concern, is that as things change, we'll still be not heard, and that'll give us we'll have less and less of a voice and less of an opportunity to have a voice as we move forward if something doesn't change.
Gotcha. And Vicky, what work is done? What would you say your primary work at Preserve Cayucos is?
Well, this relationship that Harley mentioned between Cayucos and the county government is an important one. It affects our lives in every possible way. Usually, unfortunately, not in a good way. Mm-hmm. The previous city where I lived was incorporated, and the mayor, I had occasion to call her one time because there was a problem where I lived, and I told her we were having a problem with a water line. She immediately knew not only where the building was, she knew the street I lived on. She knew that they had been working in an adjacent community on the water lines, but not on ours. She had a history. She understood all of it immediately. She referred me to another council member. They immediately got somebody out there, I would say within an hour. Wow. There were city employees there working on this. And when your governing body is the county, that's the next level after your little town. That person you contact is responsible for the entire county. San Luis Obispo County is so spread out. The towns have very, very diverse needs. And if you find someone who's familiar with Cayucos and some of the issues that we have with land use, with water, all these other things, you'd be very lucky because the majority don't have that experience. they deal on a daily basis with all these much larger cities. So finding someone who will understand the question you have, understand the importance of it, whether it's urgent or not, what the history of the problem is, it's very rare to find someone like that. And they are overwhelmed. So we very often have problems that they go unresolved or a little Band-Aid is put on it, and that's actually worse because then the county feels it's been addressed. We're done with you. Hmm. And I, for example, have a huge gaping hole about 6 feet wide and about 4 feet across and directly in front of my front porch. It has a drain in it for rainwater to go through. I've so far in the 4 years I've been in that house seen three people fall into that open drain. So they're falling down about 2.5 feet. They get out of their car and down they go.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing to me that that problem continues, and I've reported it over and over and over, and it's still wide open. No plan to address it.
Wow. Yeah, so I can see that there's sort of like this gap in responsiveness to residential needs. And I can see how the difference between like a local city council,
yes,
you know, might be more responsive to their constituents. But when you're a supervisor, it sounds like they might be a little too like massive in terms of the area, the districts that they represent. That's a really good point. I wonder, like, in terms of the population in Cuyucos, how many people are full-time residents, how many people are part-time residents, and what about the short-term vacation people? Does anyone have an answer?
We're losing people. Back in the 2000 census, we had 3,000 people, roughly. In the 2010 census, we had 2,500 people. The 2020 census, we had about 2,400, and it's gone down since then. And I think that's optimistic.
Okay.
Our housing stock, on the other hand, has increased to where it's just about 50-50 with occupied houses versus unoccupied houses. And the unoccupied houses are vacation rentals and second homes. These second homes sit vacant most of the year, just sitting there, and it's a problem. It's a real problem. I don't know the population of that. I mean, we look at the July 4th population of the town and say, could that be the population? Yeah, what, 20, 30,000 right, at that point. But you can see how small Cayucos is with that amount. Our school was losing students and has lost students dramatically. Recently, I believe that there's been some interdistrict transfers coming in because it is the number one school in the state, I believe, and 14th in the country. That's pretty good. It's a good school. Mm-hmm. You know, Cayucos voluntarily a few years back voted to raise our property taxes to improve the school tremendously, which is pretty impressive in this day and age. So we take great pride in our school, and that's our community. You know, you have a community life built around it. And we see, and we'll get into this later, I think, when we talk more about vacation rentals and such, how the lack of people living full-time changes the nature of a community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we pride ourselves. I used to call us the last funky little beach town, and I'm the only one who liked that. But other people prefer the last authentic California beach town. You know, some people say the town where time stood still. In other words, we still have that old nautical western feeling of little buildings in there that you go back and you think, I'm in a time past here when I'm here. You know, one of the things that caused me to say I'm only leaving in a pine box was driving over Morro Bay over that little grade there and coming down into the surf view. And all of a sudden, all the anxieties and troubles that go with working full time, I had disappeared. And I was now in a vacation land.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. I mean, my mental health probably improved 25 points. Well, you don't have points, do you? but if you did, it would have been 25 points.
Yeah, depends on the scale.
Yeah.
I wonder how this this mix in population of people leaving and vacationers coming and the influx, just like different times of the year, how that might affect like the way the land is used. And just not only that, but like, what about neighborhood life? Like if somebody's vacation short-term rental is in like a well-established neighborhood, and then you have people coming and going who aren't usually coming and going, what that does to the overall feel of town. Sharon, do you have anything to say to that in terms of how the neighborhood changes, or how population change contributes?
To Mario, are you asking me because I own a vacation rental?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I do have something to say. You know, we do own a vacation rental. We inherited quite a bit of property, about 2.5 acres, I think, around that. And that's the only way that we can afford to pay for it, okay? So we do have a vacation rental. However, there are rules, if you wish to follow them, for vacation rentals. One is, you know, we have a local agency. We have a local that we pay. We have a local person that responds to issues or problems immediately within 15 minutes. We have a license. We pay all the taxes. We do, we have our neighbors report to us if there's any kind of issue with who happens to be staying there. And if it is, they go on a permanent do not rent list. We take a lot of pride in our rental, but we also have a big concern for our neighbors, which is a mobile home park. Okay. And, we work beautifully with them. We follow all of the county rules. And by being licensed and et cetera. But my understanding is there are many vacation rentals, or I should say Airbnb, Vrbo type rentals that are not licensed. There is nobody close by to respond to issues. There's nobody to oversee or stop, you know, vandalism, trash, damage, et cetera. And my thought is, if everybody followed the rules and that was somehow enforced by the county, which I don't believe it is now, you wouldn't be attracting the same people. And if you did, that you would change that. You would stop attracting them and move on to something better, because you can manage a vacation rental in a way that is cohesive with the neighborhood. You just have to do it. And with the rules that San Luis County has, I think that would be so doable. But unfortunately, they just don't enforce the rules. I'm not sure how you get around that.
We're going to take a short break to hear from our team, and we'll be right back on Central Coast Voices.
The Live Oak Music Festival, June 19th through the 21st at El Choro Regional Park. 3 days of live music from folk and funk to bluegrass, blues, and samba, plus camping, art and craft vendors, workshops, yoga, and kids' activities. It's a Central Coast tradition that brings music lovers together while supporting KCBX Public Radio. Gather your friends, pack your dancing shoes, and kick off summer at Live Oak. Single day and full festival tickets are at liveoakfest.org.
Hola, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Every Thursday afternoon at 2, you can hear Latino USA on KCBX. Latino USA is a Peabody Award-winning radio journal of news and culture from a Latino-Latina perspective. It chronicles how we're living, shaping, and changing the United States of America. Tune in for in-depth reporting, candid conversations, and fascinating stories. Join me for Latino USA Thursdays from 2 to 3 on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Nathan Lane. He's best known for his performances in The Producers, The Birdcage, and The Lion King. He was just nominated for a Tony for his starring role as Willie Loman in Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman. He says it's the thing he's most proud of in his career. Join us.
Ahead on our Thursday here on KCBX, it's Latino USA at 2, Fresh Air at 3. Right now, let's return to Mario Espinoza Kulik and his guest on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Mario.
Thank you. Welcome back to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik. Our guests today are John Carcel, Advisor to Preserve Cayucos LLC, Sharon Boradori, Officer of Preserve Cayucos LLC, and Harley K. Dubois, Officer of Preserve Cayucos LLC, as well as Vicky Tamush, Officer with Preserve Cayucos LLC. I'd like to continue discussing the local topics that residents of Cayucos face every day, and also acknowledge that these topics are representative of what many communities face throughout the Central Coast region, especially in Cayucos, where you think it's an unincorporated city, so it's like things are different there than any other town that has a like organized government. Tourism is a key industry that can support local businesses and bring people into relationship with beautiful places, especially on our Central Coast. Anywhere you go around here is just striking. I also want to mention that as housing becomes scarce and vacation rentals expand, there's also this sort of pressure for more development when it comes to, I mean, we've seen it. If people have been driving down the Pacific Coast Highway from Cayucos to the Five Cities, we've seen like all these new housing development coming in for what looks like intentionally building short-term rental capacity. I want to say that while this supports local businesses and brings people into the relationship with the world around them, it also, I think, could be weary or at least like exhausting for longtime residents that feel like the community they know and love is becoming less viable or losing its sense of character or even affordability. If you have anything to say about this and this is something that you've been thinking about, you can join the conversation and ask a question of our guests. Call us at 805-781-3875 or email your questions at voices@kcbx.org. Vicky, do you mind sharing just like what are the projects that developers are sort of presenting as like a like what's coming to Cayucos? Like if there's any projects or developers that are trying to bring something to Cayucos that would change it?
Most of the new projects that at least I come across are some form of residence that can be made into a vacation rental after they get built and have all their permits out of the way. And that surreptitious process is very troublesome for our town. We're constantly having to keep on the lookout for whether this new structure that's being proposed is a vacation rental in disguise and that it's being promoted to us as a single-family residence or a hotel, but it's really not. It's really a short-term vacation rental. The problem with that is that short-term vacation rentals, as John mentioned, are far out of proportion in Cayucos and, unfortunately, completely unregulated. The rules are there, as Sharon said, but the enforcement is not. That causes a big problem for our town. So we have a problem keeping a quality of life for that reason.
Right. Harley, John, or Sharon, do you have anything to add about what these projects and the developers are trying to bring to Cayucos?
I would love to mention that I think we're really proud and happy to have wonderful people coming in from the Central Coast. From Fresno and from Bakersfield and all these areas. And we pride ourselves in having affordable places for people to come and bring their families. And as things tend to sort of want to keep ratcheting up and turning more into more and more expensive housing developments or short-term rental developments, et cetera, we're pricing out those folks, and that will definitely change our vacation flavor of our vacation seasons, which we so enjoy. And so that's just one aspect of it. And then, of course, there's full-time people coming and moving in. And, John, I bet you have something to say about this because you've been around this for a long time.
The problem with vacation rentals, number one, is that you have a business in a residential area. So right away you're going to have a problem there. And you get enough of them in, whether they're legal or non-legal, whatever that means, then they're going to take away or change the character of the neighborhood. and they can change it dramatically to where your neighbor doesn't know your neighbor anymore because the houses on both sides are vacation rentals. And on weekends, there's loud parties or even if there's not. There are cars parked on the street that don't belong and all of this type of stuff. You lose your community. The community is gone. There's nobody living there. There's no community anymore. You know, it would be nice if we could get workforce housing in. You know, we've got land on the other side of Highway 101 in the valleys. There's land there. We have the water at Whale Rock. We can get workforce housing. If you look at the new buildings, workforce housing that Morro Bay just did on Highway 1 intersection, that's really nice stuff. Okay, put some of that out there so we have it. But the problem with vacation rentals is they're different. They're a different use in the residential area, and it comes across that way. I once was against all of them. I'm not anymore. I've met responsible vacation rental owners like Sharon and others who regulate the people who are in there and take it and pay the tax and everything else. The problem we have is we don't have any hotels. Just we got a bunch of motels. We need more. We need more, and they're hard to build. Mm-hmm. Land's expensive. So lately we've seen the first one of an onset of vacation rental motels, which is the renting of a vacation of a two- or three-bedroom suite, basically, in a building, a four-unit building on a residential lot in a commercial zone. That's the key. It doesn't negatively affect the neighborhoods, but it gives people a place to stay. And, you know, I remember when I was younger and skiing, we'd take off, we'd get a vacation rental because you'd get 20 people in there. And so it was a lot cheaper than a hotel. So I'm not against them anymore like that, the way I was. But they do need to be regulated. The county is in the process, or they have, or they're going to hire somebody to enforce vacation rentals. I don't know what that means, to tell you the truth. Does that mean our vacation rentals or Paso Robles vacation rentals now? Is that they're the hot spot coming in for that? So I'm not sure exactly what one person can or can't do, and we'll have to see. But yeah, that'll be coming up. But when you look at a 50-50 ratio of occupied homes to unoccupied homes, you're looking at the loss of a community. And it can't go higher than that. We have to stop that. That's how we know how many illegal vacation rentals we have, because of all that housing stock that's there. Mm-hmm. I think we have something like 365 legal vacation rentals per the current ordinance, which is probably about 300 more than the population of the town can handle. So there is a committee of the Cayucas Advisory Council that is looking into the vacation rental issue and whether or not the current ordinance should be modified at all. Should it be changed? And if so, how? And the Coastal Commission has been weighing in on this also. We're in the coastal zone, so the last word on anything is the Coastal Commission. And so I do expect that there will be some changes coming in the near future rather than the long-term future. But, you know, we can't do away with all vacation rentals in Cayucas if we don't have any place else for folks to stay. We want people from the valley to come. You know, we like these people, and they're good. It would be better if they were in the downtown commercial area where the restaurants are. You know, if you have a vacation rental, there's a tendency to eat inside. You bring your food. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you are in a hotel room, you go out to a restaurant.
Right.
Okay, that circles all the way around. So,
thanks for sharing about that. Sharon, you want to share as well?
Yeah, I agree that there's too many vacation rentals, and that, you know, that should have been handled. Unfortunately, should have been handled a long time ago. You know, like before they were built. Our vacation rental is definitely not downtown. It's up on a hillside that we own, and it's, you know, all by itself. The only thing close to us at all is a mobile home park, who actually likes us. But again, it's that reiterating of the rules, you know, that I hope that they come up with, you know, that the the Advisory Council and the Coastal Commission and the county, they all come up with rules and regulations that can help the residents and vacation rentals be more cohesive, more friendly, whatever. But without the rules, this is exactly what happens. Without the rules being enforced, this is what happens. People get really upset. There's too many. They're intruding into very crowded little neighborhoods where they don't belong. They don't have parking. We have parking. We don't have anybody parking on the street. There used to be a rule that you could only have a vacation rental every four
rentals a night.
Oh, the distance between rentals.
Every block.
Yeah, you couldn't have more than one vacation rental within a block's distance, and I know that that's been violated all over the place. So, again, I definitely am for rules and regulations governing them, keep them safe, keep them from being a nuisance to homeowners. But, again, done right, I think they could cohabit well.
I agree. Thank you, Sharon, for sharing that, and also for your guest.
That was a little extra guest there. That was Dan Foradori, Sharon's
husband.
Yeah,
he was supposed to use hand signals, but he spoke, so
well, the more the merrier. Welcome. Vicki, did you have one more contribution?
I just wanted to mention that a function of this issue of the overgrowth of short-term vacation rentals is that you've now generated the need for people in the service industry. So you need people that change the towels and clean rooms and do all those sorts of things. But if they can't afford to live where they work, what happens to that community? Because of the way Cayuga sits up against the ocean, and then we've got Highway 1, and then there's a big gap before other towns, there isn't anybody working in Cayuga that has anything under a 45-minute commute. I think that's fundamentally wrong.
Right.
Our community has these long-term service workers. I've met many that have been working in motels for 20-some years and still can't afford to live in the community where they work. I think that's just wrong. We should have housing that people who do these jobs can afford to live in with their families. That would so enrich our community. I think all of us know very well there's a reason that it's predominantly a white community, and it's predominantly an affluent community. And that's true of other places in the world, but Cayuga is isolated geographically, so we need to solve that problem by bringing in affordable housing for the working population.
Yeah, that's an important point. I'm wondering, has there been any, like, hardship or stories of people having to move regretfully because of this, like, issue?
Actually, this is maybe not exactly on point here, but I know of a contractor that the more expensive the housing got within the entire county, the farther away his workers were moving, and they were driving from Santa Maria to Cayuga to work for him. He was paying them a pretty good wage so they could do that. And then with not this price increase with gas, but the previous one, they just couldn't afford it anymore. They could not afford to spend the kind of money that it cost them to drive an hour each way to go to work. And his only choice was to find other workers somehow, or to raise his salaries to those employees. And when he raises his salaries, that raises the cost to the consumer. Right? And there really wasn't any other choice. I agree. We need affordable housing so badly. I've been trying to talk to people about that for a long time. You know, there's our particular piece of property next to the house has got, you know, water issues and sliding issues and asbestos issues. But aside from that, I would love to see affordable housing there. I think there's so many places that we could put it. But to drive here every single day that far away and not be able to take advantage of the living here, it is, like Ricky said, it is just wrong.
I appreciate you sharing that with us. And, you know, it sounds like there are obstacles to just being a resident and being a business owner and just in general for even the advisory council, the Cayucos Advisory Council. What about any obstacles for your group? Has there been anything in the way of the work that you want to do in the town?
Well, on the 16th, that will be our first public event. We're newly formed, so I don't think for Preserve Cayucos we've experienced that yet. We do see it in town, though. Mm-hmm. Other organizations and just projects and efforts that people do, we do see that.
Got it. Thank you. I'm Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's Central Coast Voices and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It will be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you'll find this show and many others to choose from. You can also find this episode and all our past shows by searching Central Coast Voices wherever you get your podcasts. I think one thing that I'm taking away from the conversation that we've had is that our local communities do have a voice, especially when it comes to local elections, which there is California primary elections coming up on June 2nd, and eligible citizens can register in advance to vote by May 18th. To register or check your registration status, visit registertovote.ca.gov. If you missed the deadline or your address changes before Election Day, you can still complete same-day voter registration at your polling place. Don't forget to vote. Don't forget to ask about your ballot or your polling place. Just go to registertovote.ca.gov. Returning to our guests, we do have John Carcel, advisor to Preserve Cayucos LLC, Sharon Boradori, officer of Preserve Cayucos LLC, Harley K. Dubois, officer of Preserve Cayucos LLC, and Vicky Tamush with Preserve Cayucos LLC. In this last round, I want to focus on how people can get involved and make an impact on the issues and topics we've been discussing today. As Vicky mentioned, Preserve Cayucos is planning a forum on May 16th for two candidates running for District 2 Supervisor on the County Board of Supervisors. Are there any major goals for this event?
I think the greatest goal and accomplishment we can have is if we get a lot of folks from Cayucos to come and hear these two candidates. This is a very unusual election in that it would normally be the primary, but because we only have two candidates running, this is the election. This will determine who our county supervisor is, who will be making decisions for our town. This is the first lowest level of government, so it's extremely important to Cayucans how this election turns out. And we want people to come and hear from both of them. It'll be completely open and neutral. Each candidate will have exactly the same amount of time as the other. They'll be posed the exact same questions. We just want them to have a chance to tell us who they are, how they'll be making decisions on our behalf.
Harley?
Yeah. Yes, thank you. We haven't mentioned yet, but we are nonpartisan. So Preserve Cayucos is... We're just here to help do the best we can for the voices in Cayucos, and we have no affiliations, and we really are just trying to provide the opportunity for people to come and do their own due diligence. If they haven't had time, if they're working too hard, you know, they can come on a Saturday from 10 until 12 and be out in time to take care of the kids or take them to the beach or whatever, and come and just educate themselves as to what our options are in front of us.
Yeah. And in terms of attendance, how can people attend? Is it all in person? Is there a Zoom? How do we get there?
It's all in person. There's no pre-registration required. It's free. All are completely welcome. And we figured because it's in the morning on a Saturday, we would also have a vendor there selling refreshments. So it'll be a Cayucos-owned business, Sand Dollar Kitchen, that will be providing some refreshments available for purchase.
Wonderful. And just for folks who are listening, if you're interested in going, this is a forum where everyone's invited, especially if you live in Cayucas. Most importantly, if you live in Cayucas, if you're invited to meet the candidates that are running for District 2 supervisor. This is going to be at Borodori Garage at 455 North Ocean Avenue in Cayucas, California, 93430, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Saturday, May 16th. I also wanted to ask, with the last bit amount of time here, is there anything you want our listeners to understand in terms of coastal development and how it affects Cayucas that we haven't touched on?
Well, I think one important aspect is for us to remember that, as John said, the ultimate authority in our area is the Coastal Commission, but we are their constituents. We have every right to go before the Coastal Commission and the county and every other governmental body and say what our concerns are, express and explain, because none of these people live here, and we do. It's really our obligation to take part in every way that we can, and we have had successes like that. There have been developments that were proposed that were preposterous. I can't think of a better description than that. But when the people all came together and spoke publicly about it, we have been able to get decisions where the Coastal Commission or the county has recognized what we're saying, and they have voted in favor of protecting our town from things like that.
And in terms of, like, our listeners that may be in Cayucas and also for the general public, are there any ways to get involved with Preserve Cayucas LLC to support?
Absolutely. There's only four of us are doing this right now, and five of us, and we could use more help for sure. We are an LLC, so we're not a nonprofit, but we would appreciate any donations. We're doing this out of pocket as we speak. And we need more people. We need more people to help. We need some help with bookkeeping at the moment and, you know, just populating lists and helping us get our act together, essentially. Then, of course, we'd like to get to the point where we maybe could look ahead and say, oh, this is the kind of thing we know we'll need to be focusing on, or this event's coming up and we should be gearing up for that. And we don't want to be the deciders of these things. It's our community that's going to decide these things. So the more community effort, more community contributions we can get, the better and stronger we're going to be and the better our voice is going to be.
Yeah. And for folks that are business owners and assist the tourist economy in thriving and, you know, manage short-term rentals, a.k.a. Sharon, do you have any advice for people that are within that community, that how they can contribute to the Cayucas community?
Well, especially people that own vacation rentals, you know, they need to make a really good effort at getting to meet the locals, the residents, the business owners. They need to support the business owners, you know, go there. I put a list of the local businesses in our home when we rent it. I think that, you know, I'm not a local person from Cayucas, my husband is, but I spend enough time walking back and forth on the streets, talking to everybody that I could, introducing myself, telling them I had a vacation rental, and, you know, wanting them to know that it was important to me, that it works for everyone, not just for me. And I think the more that you do that, the more cooperation you get from the community. So they need to get out there on the street, meet people, get involved, join groups, volunteer, donate, whatever it is they need to do to really become part of the community. You're going to benefit from your place in the community. You need to be a part of that community.
I appreciate that. I wanted to ask everyone, you know, we've talked a lot about development, county versus city politics. We've also covered on the, you know, business piece of Cayucas. Is there anything you'd like to add that we have not gotten to yet?
I would like to say that Cayucas is a very unusual spot in this world. And anyone who's visited there, even for a short time, can recognize that. I tend to invite a lot of people to come stay at my home, and every single one of them has said, how did you find this little jewel? How could a place like this still exist? And I think probably all the folks in Preserve Cayucas would say, as I do, that every morning I wake up and I think, how did I wind up being so lucky that I live in this beautiful place? The beauty of it nourishes me somehow. And I see that it nourishes everyone around me. When you have something that rare, I think you have an obligation to protect it. What we see all too often are people who come in and want to overtake it, but not protect it. And our aim is to protect it. That's all we really want to do, is this beautiful thing that exists, we want to make it available to everyone. And if someone comes in and destroys it, that's the end. You can never go back to what it is now.
Yeah. John, Harley, do you have anything to add?
I think that was just perfect. Just perfect, Vicki. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree, Vicki. With all the environmental concerns we have these days and the political issues we're having, you know, the small towns are becoming more and more rare, and preserving this one is seems really worthwhile to me. And the works, a lot of it's already been done with the Estero Plan. And if we could all bone up on the Estero Plan and rally behind it and actualize what's actually already been started, it would really help us. And that's why I'm looking forward to looking to this new race for District 2 and understanding what our best candidate is. So I'm looking forward to this coming Saturday, May 16th.
Cool. And then just a reminder before we say goodbye to our guests, this Saturday, the 16th, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Borodori Garage, 455 North Ocean Avenue, Cayucas, California, 93430. Cayucas residents, you're invited to meet the candidates.
It's free.
And it's free. Maybe there's going to be some refreshments.
There will definitely be food. And when I looked at the menu, I got hungry. It's great.
Cool. And so, Sharon, just back to you before we cut out. Any last words you want to share to our listeners?
Just I hope that you show up on the 16th. I think it'll be a great opportunity. And we would love to have you not only show up, but also find out more about what we're trying to do and join us.
Thank you. And John, any last words for us?
I'll echo the same.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for joining us here on Central Coast Voices today. We hope you will tune in next time for Central Coast Voices on Thursday, May 14th at 1 p.m. with hosts Fred Monroe and Dr. Penny Borenstein from the San Luis Obispo County Department of Public Health. Central Coast Voices is co-produced by the show's hosts in collaboration with KCBX. We depend on folks like you to continue these programs, so please donate today or become a member with your monthly donation online at www.kcbx.org. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik. Thanks for joining us.